Bach's orchestral suites are, at once, some of the most popular works the composer wrote, and some of the most mysterious. But according to conductor Richard Egar, we can put together some clues that help to unlock those mysteries.
You know, there are all sorts of theories about early versions of these suites and whether they were done without trumpets, with trumpets. But, for instance, the fourth suite, we also have the Cantata 110, where the first chorus is all about our mouths are full of laughter. It's all sort of belly laughs and good, having a good time, jolly time in D major.
Richard Egar, the music director of London's Academy of Ancient Music, joins us for a look at music that invites us into the genius of Bach through the addictive rhythms of dance, coming up on the Bach Hour. Hello, I'm Brian McCreath. Welcome to the Bach Hour from 99.5 WCRB, a part of WGBH Boston. Richard Egar is a regular visitor to Boston, leading the Handel and Haydn Society in concerts that have been described by critics as reinvigorating, with expressive intensity and dramatic power. And you'll hear from Richard Egar later on in the program. And you'll also hear Bach's cantata number 54, Widerstehe doch der Sünde, or Just Resist Sin. As always, you'll find a translation of that piece from Boston's Emmanuel Music at our website, classicalwcrb.org. That's also where you can hear this and past programs, again, on demand. Again, that's all at classicalwcrb.org. For now, here is music from the first book of Bach's Well-Tempered Clavier. From pianist Pierre-Laurent Aimard, this is the Prelude and Fugue in F-sharp minor, here on the Bach Hour. Thank you. Pierre Laurent Aimard is known as a pianist who's capable of taking on any kind of music, including the most technically fearsome works of our own time. But sometimes he applies his laser-like focus and precision to music by Bach, as you heard in the Prelude and Fugue in F-sharp minor from Book 1 of The Well-Tempered Clavier. Bach's Cantata No. 54 is, in some ways, one of his most spare. It's written for only a single voice, and it includes only three movements. But the message of Widerstehe doch der Sünde, or just resist sin, is powerful, and that economy of writing makes that message feel incredibly direct, maybe even blunt. The piece starts with an unsettled dissonance, but as layers of sound build up, it begins to feel, maybe, luxurious, with a texture the late Craig Smith of Emmanuel Music compared to velvet. And it leads to the entry of that solo voice, singing the words, "Just resist sin, lest its poison seize you." Bach is playing with our perceptions, sending an explicit message through the text while creating the seductiveness of sin through the music itself. It embodies the tension between the believer's conscience and what the believer is tempted by. A recitative lays things out in more detail, the text translating as, "The appearance of vile sin is indeed outwardly very beautiful. On the outside, it is gold. Yet going further in, it shows itself as only an empty shadow and a whitewashed grave." The final movement brings some resolution, but not a relaxed, joyful celebration, as you might hear in some of Bach's other works. Rather, laid out as a fugue, it's a reminder that the believer has constant work to do, the soloist singing, "If one is able, with virtuous devotion, to withstand sin's contemptible bonds, it is already done away with." Find a complete translation of the text for this piece at our website, classicalwcrb.org. Here's a performance of the Cantata No. 54, Widerstehe doch der Sünde, or Just Resist Sin, with countertenor Daniel Taylor, the Tafelmusik Baroque Orchestra, and conductor Jean Lamon, here on the Bach Hour.
Sünden ist zwar von außen wunderschön.
The cantata number 54 by Bach, Widerstehe doch der Sünde, or Just Resist Sin, in a performance by countertenor Daniel Taylor, the Tafelmusik Baroque Orchestra, and conductor Jean Lamont. Richard Egar has been the music director of the Academy of Ancient Music in London since 2006, and he comes through Boston on a pretty regular basis as a collaborator with the Handel and Haydn Society. So during one of his visits, I took the opportunity to talk with him about the Academy's recording of Bach's four surviving orchestral suites. And surviving is the key word, as you'll hear from the beginning of our conversation.
It's one of those genres of music from him that we've got to assume there is a ton more that we don't have anymore.
I'm sure a lot of it was used for fire kindling or something by somebody, not by him, but was sold off to by one of his impecunious sons. There are only four that survive, and they're not a set. They're just the only four that we have, unfortunately. But I'm sure he wrote much more.
Yeah. Of the four, one of them stands out as maybe the one where you have to very consciously separate yourself from previous context. The third suite is so, let's just say, common.
Yeah.
How do you step back from all that and take a fresh look at the third suite?
Well, it's like any. I often have this, you know, when people ask, why do you do Messiah again? Why do you play Pachelbel Canon? Because they are amazing pieces. The air from that suite, it is a perfect piece. It is just the most gloriously perfect music you could imagine. So there's no wonder it's famous. I mean, it is just an extraordinary piece of music. And, you know, we love nothing more than when we're rehearsing this stuff. We actually play everything really, really, really slowly because it's just so nice to hear it all. We played a bit quicker in concert, but it's, you know, the air is, it is an absolutely glorious piece of music. I mean, there isn't much better.
The Air from Bach's Orchestral Suite No. 3, performed by the Academy of Ancient Music and their director, Richard Egar. When he and the Academy set out to record the four suites by Bach, Richard Egar created brand new editions of the music, a process he says was necessary for a couple of reasons.
We have surviving material, so we sort of, you know, doctor the material to what we've got available to us. But yeah, they're interesting pieces, and the editions that are out at the moment aren't infallible. Let's put it that way.
Well, tell me about the process of doing that. I mean, it's kind of fascinating that you go back to the source material.
Yeah, well, I mean, for instance, for the first suite, there's just one set of parts which survives in mostly in Bach's hand. And it's kind of curious because the bass line only survives for harpsichord and bassoon. So does that mean he only used a harpsichord and bassoon on the bass line? I doubt it. Yeah. But no, that's all that survives. So you have to sort of make decisions based on what we've got available. And you know, there are all sorts of theories about early versions of these suites and whether they were done without trumpets, with trumpets. I mean, my great colleague Andrew Manzi came and did a tour here with the orchestral suites with a string quartet, theorbo and harpsichord. There are all sorts of putative ideas about early versions, which are interesting, but there's very little hardcore evidence. But for instance, the fourth suite, that almost certainly there was some kind of early version of that. We don't know exactly what it was, but the thing is, it comes down to us in manuscripts with the trumpets. And there's also, for the fourth suite, we also have the cantata 110, where the first movement survives as part of the cantata, which is fascinating, actually, and it also helps with matters of tempo for that particular suite. Because if you look at what the voices are having to sing, it cannot be the sort of rampantly rabid fast tempos that some groups have taken this piece at, because you can't sing it, and you can't get the text out. But it also has a clue to the sort of character of the piece as well, because that cantata, the first chorus, is all about our mouths are full of laughter. It's all sort of belly laughs and good, having a good time, jolly time in D major. So it's
that cantata was for Christmas, I think.
Yeah, it's a wonderful piece, and it just gives you a clue to the character of that opening movement of the fourth suite.
And here is the Academy of Ancient Music and director Richard Egar in Bach's Orchestral Suite No. 4 here on the Bach Hour. Thank you. That's the Orchestral Suite No. 4 by Bach, performed by the Academy of Ancient Music and their music director, Richard Egar. When I talked with Richard Egar about this recording, I asked him about one specific aspect of the Academy's approach to performing this music.
You decided to record these with one player on a part rather than sort of an orchestral section. Mm-hmm. And what's behind that? Because, you know, the first thing that comes up is balance with the trumpets. But there's more to it than that, I expect.
The thing is, a modern concept of a trumpet player is a noisemaker. And that just wasn't the case in the Baroque period. You know, the trumpet players could play really quietly. And we were very blessed to have a great team of trumpet players led by David Blackadder. And I remembered when we did the Brandenburgs, we also did that single players, and we were giving concerts with Brandenburgs. And I remember we did a concert in Bath in England, in the I think it was the Assembly Rooms in Bath, which is a wonderful sort of early 19th century building. And I kid you not, the recorder was the loudest instrument on the stage, you know, because Dave can play so beautifully quietly, and it's not, you know, the trumpet isn't this time isn't about blasting at full force all the time. It's about delicate, because you know it's so treacherous up there, and it's just all about control and having that ability to control the sound. So in fact, when you've got good trumpet players, for the fourth suite, you have a naturally equal balance. If you think about it, you have three groups of instruments. You've got the strings, the reeds, and the brass, all of which have three high instruments. You've got three high trumpets, three oboes, and the three high strings, the two violins and viola, supported by their respective bass instruments. So there is a natural 3-3-3. So it's there is a natural balance if you've got the good players to make it work, because it will work.
That's Richard Egar, the music director of the Academy of Ancient Music. Remember, you can hear this program again on demand when you visit us online at classicalwcrb.org. Thank you for joining me today. And thanks also to Richard Egar and Matt Erickson at the Handel and Haydn Society for making this program possible, and to audio engineer Antonio Oliart-Ross. I'm Brian McCreath, and I'll hope to have your company again next week here on the Bach Hour.